There are traditional stories of vanishing hitchhikers found throughout the country and, as we'll see in a few bonus episodes toward the end of the season, even around the world. This, however, isn't one of those stories. One afternoon, a couple was driving along the highway when, at a far distance, they saw a woman in the middle of the road, waving as though she was trying to get them to stop. The wife told her husband that he should keep driving, but he slowed down anyway. If nothing else, he wanted to be sure that he didn't hit her, but he also wanted to look around and make sure that there wasn't really anyone hurt. As they got closer, they could see that the woman had cuts and bruises on her face and arms, so the husband pulled the car to the side of the road and got out. The woman came toward them, urgently explaining that she'd been in an accident and pointing toward an overturned car that the husband now saw several yards off the side of the road. The distraught woman said that she thought that her husband was dead. Her baby, though, was still alive, but trapped in the overturned car. The husband told his wife to dial 911 and then told the injured woman to wait there while he went down to try to rescue her child. When he got to the wrecked vehicle, he saw the husband through the driver's window, and the baby was crying in the seat in the back. So he got on the ground and crawled through bits of broken glass, through the mangled rear car door, carefully unfastened the infant from its harness, and cradled it in his arms as he went back up the embankment toward his own car. When he got there, though, the injured woman was gone. His wife said that she had followed him back down to the crash. He hadn't noticed her there, and looking back down the hill now, he didn't see her. He handed the infant to his wife and went back to the crash. As he walked around the vehicle, he saw the woman's husband, and then, for the first time, he noticed the woman that had flagged them down. She was still seatbelted into the passenger seat. When the police and paramedics arrived, they said that it appeared that the wreck had happened hours, if not several days before, and that the man and the woman inside had likely died instantly. With the wreck not being visible from the road, though, no one had reported it, and it was nothing short of miraculous that they'd stopped and found the infant. Welcome to Epitaph The Others, a special bonus series exclusively for our Patreon subscribers. In The Others, we will explore stories that fit with the season's theme, but that, for whatever reason, we couldn't quite get into the main series. In some episodes, The Others will add more detail to one of the stories that we covered in our main series. Some will tell the stories of investigations that we consider unresolved, where we couldn't quite find conclusive parallels between legend and real life. And some will tell the stories that we feel we were somehow able to debunk. This is a companion series to Epitaph, and a thank you to those of you who keep Epitaph going. I'm Jason, and this is Epitaph, The Others. With the advent of the internet in the early 1990s, ghost stories and urban legends have been digitized. The transmission and dispersal of folklore evolved from people huddled together around campfires and sharing stories in front of their fireplaces, to individuals reading them by the dull glow of computer and phone screens. What used to be the sort of story that would haunt a neighborhood in Northern California or suburban Virginia are now stories that spread around the world. And, as we've devoured the authentic urban legends of old and tired ourselves of their familiarity, the internet has taken to manufacturing new ones in bulk. Stories that, like the folklore of old, are often repeated without attribution or acknowledgement of its original author, perhaps modified slightly each time it's retold. This constant demand for new stories and new ways to scare ourselves has led some modern lore websites, like, say, Creepypasta, to host competitions for the creation of new urban legends, and the most famous, or infamous, of its inventions is the Slender Man. Created in 2009 by Eric Knudsen, known on the internet as Victor Surge, Slender Man is unnaturally tall, thin, and faceless. Dressed in a black suit and digitally added to photos and videos of everyday life, commonly scenes like parties, hikes in the woods, or children playing, Slender Man is a mix of common tropes and tentacled Lovecraftian horror. Some fans, though, believe that he's real, that he is either a being that has existed from time immemorial but just now realized, or that he exists as a tulpa, a being brought into existence by collective belief, a psychically crowdsourced monster. These online stories become so believable and so convincing that this, the Slender Man, led two Wisconsin girls, Morgan Geyser and Anissa Weir, to stab a friend 19 times. Weir told the police that when Geyser first made the suggestion, she was surprised by it, but also excited to prove skeptics wrong and show that Slender Man really did exist. Though extreme, This is an example of how new folklore continues to be reproduced and reinvented in ways that continue to impact our daily lives, of how easy it is to create false realities online, and of the need to apply a healthy dose of skepticism to the things you read on the internet. The story that we shared in the opening of this episode, the ghost of a woman who saved the life of her infant after she herself had died in a car wreck, is another one of these stories. It actually spread around the internet in the late 90s and early 2000s via chain emails, and as a result, it's easy to write it off as a work of fiction. Except, it isn't. In March of 2015, thanks in large part to 24-hour news channels, millions of people witnessed the dramatic rescue of Lily Groesbeck. Lily, just 18 months old, was found strapped in her car seat in an overturned car, partially submerged in an icy Utah river. At about 10 p.m. on the night of March 6th, her mother, Jennifer Groesbeck, had left her parents' home in Salem, Utah to go back to her house in Springville. Jennifer's father strapped Lily into her car seat, never suspecting that it would be the last time that he would see his daughter, Jenny, alive. Just a few minutes away from her parents' house, where Main Street crosses over the Spanish Fork River, Jennifer Groesbeck lost control of her car. The car jumped the curb, hit an incline on the bridge's cement barrier, which launched the vehicle into the river, flipping it over in the process. And because of where the vehicle landed, no one could see it from the street above. Around noon the next day, a fisherman discovered the overturned Dodge sedan and called police to report what he believed to be an abandoned vehicle in the river. Officer Brian DeWitt was the first on the scene. As he got closer to the car, he could see the mother inside. Two other police officers, Jared Warner and Tyler Beddoes, arrived almost simultaneously, and that's when they heard the voice. "We were down on the car, and a distinct voice says, 'Help me,' Officer DeWitt recalled. 'It wasn't just something that was in our heads. To me, it was plain as day,' Officer Beddoes added. The three officers were joined by two firefighters, Paul Tomadakis and Lee Meacham, as they stood in the frigid water trying to turn the car back over so they could save the woman. They heard the woman say, 'Please hurry, there isn't much time.' I think it was DeWitt who said, 'We're trying our best to get in there,' Beddoes recalled. It wasn't until they got the car onto its side that they saw Lily. Firefighters Paul Tomadakis and Lee Meacham jumped onto the vehicle, got the door open, and Lee jumped up with me and held the door while I was kind of down inside. Grabbed the baby girl, lifted her out of the water, and unhooked the car seat,' Tomadakis said. 'Didn't really think about anything except trying to get her out. And once I got a hold of her, I could tell she still had some life.'" At that point, Lily Groesbeck had been strapped in her car seat, upside down, for nearly 14 hours, dangling just inches above cold river water that was rushing through the car's broken windows, with temperatures hovering near freezing throughout the night and morning. But even as they rescued Lily, the first responders came to the realization that Jenny Groesbeck, the woman whose voice they'd heard and responded to, had been killed on impact. "The only people in there were the deceased mother and child," said Officer Brian DeWitt. "We're not exactly sure where that voice came from," Officer Jared Warner told a local news channel. "How do you explain that?" "I don't know," Officer Tyler Beddoes added. Jenny Groesbeck died on March 6th, 2015, as the result of injuries sustained in the accident. She was survived by her daughter Lily, her father, three brothers, a sister, a grandmother, and numerous nieces, nephews, aunts, and uncles. She was laid to rest next to her mother in the Provo City Cemetery in Provo, Utah. The officers of the Spanish Fork Police Department and the members of the fire and rescue and ambulance crews who responded were all recognized for their efforts. But if the internet legend had been telling the story since the late 1990s, how does a story from 2015 confirm the truth of the legend? It doesn't. You see, Jenny and Lily Groesbeck's story wasn't the first time this had happened. In June of 1994, near a spot called Bullion Bend on a stretch of California Highway 50 between Sacramento and Carson City, Nevada, motorists reported seeing an apparition. Though it's implied that multiple witnesses saw the woman beside the road, described as dark-haired, naked, and deathly pale, it was Deborah Hoyt who alerted the police. Deborah and her husband were on their way home to Lake Tahoe in the early hours of the morning on June 11th, when they first saw the woman. They described her as being young, dark-haired, positioned on her side with her legs bent together, and with an arm over her head. She was so pale and unmoving that they thought that she was dead. Not having cell phones back then, they drove to the nearest gas station and called the police. At about 3 a.m., officers from the El Dorado Sheriff's Department responded to the call. A deputy, assisted by two California Highway Patrol officers, went with Deborah back to where she and her husband had seen the woman on the highway's shoulder. They searched the stretch of roadway, but they weren't able to find any trace of the woman. 5 days earlier, a waitress from Garden Valley, California, named Christine Skupish, had been traveling the same stretch of road. She'd packed her Hyundai Excel with as many clothes and personal effects as it could hold. Her plan was to take her 3-year-old son, Nick, and go see friends in Carson City for a few days. Then, she was headed south to La Habra to marry her fiancé. At around 2 a.m. on Monday morning, June 6th, she stopped for gas at a Shell station in Placerville. Christine's stepfather, Dave Stotzenbach, called the police to make a missing persons report on June 8th, but there were no leads. After hearing about the report of the woman on the side of the road, El Dorado County Deputy Sheriff Rich Strasser decided to search the stretch one more time in daylight. Near the spot where Deborah Hoyt had reported seeing the woman, Strasser spotted a child's shoe and pulled over to investigate. 40 feet down a steep embankment and hidden from the view of passersby, he saw the mangled wreck of Christine's car. According to the California Highway Patrol, the car had left the right edge of the highway, was airborne for several feet, clipped two pine trees, and rolled over before landing with the front of the car facing away from the road. The car's roof had been torn off by the impact. It was clear Christine, still fully clothed and still buckled into her seat, had been killed instantly. Deputy Strasser believed that Nick was dead too, but checked him for vital signs and found that he was still breathing. He said that the boy sighed when he shouted his name and tried to wake him. After 5 days without food or water, in temperatures that ranged from the upper 90s during the day to the low 50s at night, Nick was suffering from dehydration and hypothermia to the point that, when Strasser found him, he was blue. He was also covered in scratches and blisters from poison oak. Strasser said that he believed that Nick had managed to climb to the highway and then return to the car, but his great-aunt, Karen Nichols Daniels, suggested that Nick had been trapped in the car the entire time, saying, "He said that there was a tree lying on his mommy and he couldn't open the door." Nick also told his family that during the 5 days before he was found, his mother had been there with him, and not just in the seat beside him, but that he had also heard her talking to him, and that he had seen her go to the roadway at the top of the hill. Christine Skubish died on June 11, 1994, as the result of an automobile accident. She was 23 years old. She was buried at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Cypress, California. Her son Nick survived. Seeing reports featuring Christine's photo on the news, Deborah Hoyt recognized her as the woman that she had seen beside the road. Deborah Hoyt, Nick Skubish, and other members of Christine's family are all convinced that she waited there, trying to summon help and staying with Nick until she was sure that her son was safe. El Dorado Sheriff Sergeant Chris Palmer couldn't say how Nick had survived the wreck or the days and nights that followed, and he had no explanation for the strange sightings that had led to Nick's rescue. Instead, he simply called it miraculous. I'm your host, Jason. Thanks for listening.